The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Army patrols hit the streets of Sydney on Monday to help enforce coronavirus curbs as Australia struggles to stop the Delta variant from spreading. Around 300 unarmed military personnel have been tasked with going door to door, checking that people who have tested positive are isolating at home. They're also accompanying police officers on the hunt for rule breakers, combing neighborhoods that have emerged as hotspots as the country's largest city enters its sixth week of lockdown.
Among other things, the reporting here, just astounding. Just the military going door to door and the reporter there very calmly. This is Australia. It's happening in Australia. Day 505. 505 days to slow the spread. And this is where we are. It's unbelievable. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily coming to you live as we do every weekday right here at 11 a.m. Central time zone here in Oklahoma, 12 noon on the East Coast, and of course 9 a.m. out West. I know a lot of our listeners listen to or watch the program after the fact, so we appreciate you watching it one way or another. And of course, we're thankful too for our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on their platform. And that takes the audio-only version of this program right into 11 million homes across America. So if you want the audio version, you can go to CRN. If you'd like to watch the video presentation of this show, that we provide exclusively at our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com and put a / at the end, /live, and you can get to the live broadcast and all of those podcasts that we post a couple of hours after the show. The daily deaths for coronavirus, it's as low as it's been since the very beginning of this pandemic, and yet you'd never know it watching reports like the one I just played for you from Reuters. This is a Reuters reporter. The army joining the police door to door looking for rule breakers. That's happening not in Russia, not in Cuba, not in China. It's happening in Australia. Here's clip two.
The state of New South Wales, home to Sydney, reported 207 new cases in the past 24 hours. That follows a 16-month high recorded late last week. Meanwhile, a lockdown in Australia's third biggest city, Brisbane, has been extended. Due to end on Tuesday, it will now stay in place until the end of Sunday.
207 cases, said the reporter. 207 cases of the flu. And this is what happens to Sydney and Brisbane, two of the biggest cities in Australia. Our friends in Australia, we've got quite a few listeners that follow this program in Australia. You feel bad for them, and they're not alone, but they're among the worst as far as the conditions imposed by government, imposed upon them by the experts, the specialists, the ones with all the degrees, all the PhDs. Sydney locked down for 6 weeks, and now it's extended in Brisbane for, what, another week? You look at the death total again, it's the lowest it's been since the start of this pandemic. Listen to one final quote from that Reuters report, clip three.
Throughout the global health crisis, Australia has managed to keep its cases relatively low, but its vaccination drive has lagged many other developed countries. Prime Minister Scott Morrison has come under fire for his handling of the pandemic. He's promised that lockdowns will ease once the country vaccinates 70% of eligible citizens, which should happen, he said, by the end of the year. Only around 20% have been inoculated so far.
So there you see the buried lead on this story, the headline really, that should be There's relatively low number of cases in Australia, but it's all about the vaccine. 20% have been vaccinated, and we've got to get it up to 70%. Otherwise, everything stays shut down. We keep everything locked down. This is not about the science. This is about making you inject this deadly toxin into your body. This toxin with this toxic substance with all kinds of side effects, and that has been proven, putting that into your body, not just a double jab, as you heard at the top of the news. Now it's triple jab. You got triple jabs in Israel. You got triple jab. Well, I forget all the places that are bringing it on. Let's just put as much poison into our bodies as possible. The CDC, by the way, there was a report that came out analyzing just one county up in Massachusetts, Barnstable County, Massachusetts. The Daily Mail says, by July 26, 469 cases of COVID have been identified, of which 74% or 346 were among fully vaccinated with at least 14 days since their final dose. So of all the new cases in this one county, 74% of the cases, you heard in the Reuters report, cases, it's all cases now, not deaths, because deaths have plummeted. So it's all about the cases. And in this one county, this is a pretty good sample size, 74% have been vaccinated and they're getting the COVID. I mean, this is just, again, would reporters cover that? It's buried in the CDC statistics. The CDC coming out and admitting, and you know, and then to see the reporters try to obscure these facts and to say that, well, but I mean, this is one county, or man, you look across the United States, you look at the tens of millions that have been vaccinated. And really, it's doing it. Or if they do admit that you still get COVID from the vaccine, they're saying, ah, but you're not dying. At least it's not a real serious case of COVID. So that shows that the vaccine is working. This is the way that they reason. Listen to Don Lemon just last night talking about those fully vaccinated individuals. Clip 9.
Even with cases on the rise, more than 99.99%, are you hearing me? More than 99.99% of people fully vaccinated against COVID have not been hospitalized or died from a breakthrough case. That's all you need to know right there. So the vaccines are very good at preventing serious illness and death.
They're not very good at preventing COVID. But they're very good, says Don Lemon. This week, by the way, it's, what did he say? Are you hearing me? The last week, are you listening? Are you listening to the teacher, Don Lemon? You might get COVID, but 99.99% don't actually die. Well, last year, when we didn't even have the vaccine, 99.9% didn't die either. That death rate kept plummeting last year following Dr. Tedros, remember him back in March of last year saying, yeah, 4, maybe 5% of the people that get COVID are going to die. You're going to die. You've got a 4% chance of dying if you catch this disease. And then we come to learn later, it's more like the flu, maybe a little worse than the flu, the death rate. It's a bad flu. But there's Don Lemon. And here's this report coming from the CDC. Of the new cases in this county in Massachusetts, 74% were vaccinated. Are you hearing me? 74%. The Daily Mail says this, of the 5 COVID-19 patients who were hospitalized, 4 were fully vaccinated, of whom 2 had underlying conditions. It says no deaths were reported in either group. So this Rand Paul made this point last week, saying that the Delta variant, it spreads more rapidly than the one last year, but it's not nearly as deadly, whether you're vaccinated or not. Now, the propagandists and the media want to tell you that it's not as deadly because of the vaccine. It's not true. It says this is evidence. Well, it says it right here in the Daily Mail. Even the Daily Mail says this is evidence. The fact that there's not any deaths in this sample size, that shows that the vaccine's working. So we got to get more people vaccinated so you can get COVID again and then not die. That's the kind of twisted and convoluted reasoning we have today coming from your experts. The experts that are putting entire cities in lockdown, states in lockdown, for the what, third, fourth time? You got a triple jab, you got a triple lockdown, you got a triple mask. Where does this stop and end? It's amazing, some of these cases. Dr. Mercola, he's on the verge of being banned already on social media. When are they going to go after his website, I wonder? He says here, a recent study published by King's College in London, which operates the Zoe COVID study app to monitor COVID infection and vaccination rates, found that as of July 15th, so this is a recent study, there was an average of 15,537 new daily symptomatic cases of COVID-19 among partly or fully vaccinated people in the United Kingdom, an increase of 40% from the previous week's total of 11,000. It's getting worse, in other words. The vaccine is giving you COVID. The vaccine, it's giving you the disease. Don Lemon says, yeah, but you're not dying. Well, where were they last year when that was about the same, the stats? Yes, a lot of people were getting COVID, and for some it was very serious, particularly those that had comorbidities or that were elderly, and some did die. A lot of them died in nursing homes. I'm not even going to get into that angle. Governor Cuomo, he's got some other things to worry about today besides the nursing home scandal, but that should have taken him out a long time ago. It says here, the Zoe study, led by epidemiologist Tim Spencer, MD, of King's College, estimated that there were 17,500 new daily symptomatic cases of COVID in unvaccinated people. This is not one or two or three or four. This is, I mean, Australia shuts down entire states for a few hundred cases. This is in the UK, 17,500 new daily cases of COVID. Daily. Says here, according to a press release issued by the study's authors, with cases in the vaccinated group continuing to rise. Did you hear this? Are you listening? With cases in the vaccinated group continuing to rise, the number of new cases in the vaccinated population is set to overtake the unvaccinated in the coming days. You're more likely to get sick with COVID if you take the vaccine. I'm not even getting into all the other deadly side effects. People that have died, people that have had brain hemorrhages, heart attacks, that have had their limbs cut off, amputated. That's all in the news too, not in the mainstream, but it's there. It says on July 17, the UK's health secretary, Sajid Javid, announced he had tested positive for COVID despite having received two doses of AstraZeneca. The health secretary. It's not funny. It's not funny, but you have to keep some humor through these times. I was just telling Sam before the show, I was thinking about a camping trip and all the beautiful places that you could see here in Oklahoma, Arkansas, the surrounding areas. And then you come back to the news. Then you come back to the daily grind and see just how our nations are dying. The sickness, it's from head to toe. Isaiah 1 said it would be this way. You've got to peel away from it from time to time. But then you come back to it and you sigh, as the Bible says, you sigh and cry for the sins of our people. You see what we're doing. We're doing this to ourselves in large part. Now, there's a lot of trouble coming. It's prophesied in your Bible. There's a lot of trouble coming from without. That's just ahead of us. But this is sickness from within. This is weakness. This is really losing the pride in our power. Not in the military sense, but where is our courage? Where is our faith? Where is our health, physical and spiritual? Really, it's our spiritual health and sickness that's bringing on all of this craziness, the descent into madness. It says here, with a population of more than 66 million people, 2/3 of adults in the UK have received the vaccine. So this is one of the most vaccinated countries in the world, the UK, and it says further on, but it's experiencing a third wave of coronavirus infections, reportedly largely due to the spread of the Delta variant. Now, this is back from mid-July. I think it's since gone down in the UK, because, again, it's not as serious, this variant, but you'd never know it. Remember Don Lemon again last week in those hushed tones talking about this something that he saw on CDC, saying it was spreading faster than or easier than chickenpox. But then they turn to the cases. They don't talk about the deaths. Why don't they talk about other diseases? Why just COVID? There's plenty of other diseases that really hit you. They wallop you pretty good, but maybe most people don't die from them. When have we had this kind of hysteria for a bad flu, for a bad flu season? You never heard it. In fact, you go back a few years and sports stars and celebrities were celebrated for forging ahead when they were sick, when they were playing a ball, an important basketball game with the flu. Today, even if it's a slight, mild case, I mean, you got to withdraw from the Olympics. Or you got to withdraw from the competition. Michael Jordan, remember, I think I've mentioned this before on the show, but he was celebrated for, you know, the flu game. I forget who it was against. It was years ago. But he was out there sick with the flu. He was getting fluids during halftime and whatever else. Yeah, he was just playing the game of basketball in a crowded stadium, rubbing up against all of these other players. And he had the flu. Listen to, well, let me just read this bit from Israel. This is the same Mercola report. It says, in Israel, about 60% of the country's population has received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. So these are two of the most vaccinated nations in the world, Ephraim or Britain and Israel. It says here, about 85% of adults in Israel have been vaccinated, yet most of the new coronavirus infections are occurring in vaccinated people. It's the same in Israel. This is science. I'm giving you the science. I'm giving you the facts. Good thing this isn't being done on YouTube, because we'd be blotted out in a second. It says here, in early July, former health minister Chezi Levy, MD, confirmed that 55% of the newly infected people in Israel had been vaccinated. It's the same as the UK. And yet, what do we get? What do we get from these same officials? You better get vaccinated. And I mean, if you don't, we may come door to door to make sure you're obeying. Listen to this from yesterday. This is the White House COVID-19 response team, a press briefing that happened yesterday. Clip 6.
We've taken significant steps here to make it difficult to come back to work, or more difficult to come back to work if you're not vaccinated. There's so many reasons to get vaccinated that we've talked about. To protect yourself and to protect your loved ones. And it's also a really straightforward way to return to work. So for all federal employees, the path back to work, if you're vaccinated, is straightforward. If you're not vaccinated or you're not willing to attest to being vaccinated, then we're doing the right thing to protect the workforce. The Department of Defense is looking into how and when they'll add COVID to the list of mandatory vaccinations for active duty military. And we're seeing it in the private sector. More and more companies are coming up with systems that are modeled after our system or similar to our system, or requiring vaccinations across the board. You're seeing it at universities. You're seeing it at health systems. So I think that this requiring of individuals to be vaccinated in order to come back to work or to go back to school is a growing trend and makes a lot of sense.
It's a growing trend, as he says there, and he's getting the DOJ involved. And, of course, these politicians are pressuring these private companies like de Blasio and Cuomo in New York to require vaccinations, a vaccine passport. Remember how crazy and ridiculous that sounded a few months ago? It's here. We wrote this in The Cure is Killing Us last summer. It says, in many ways, it appears the ramifications of the reaction to the coronavirus will dwarf and far outlive the virus itself. That's tomorrow's news today. That's the Trumpet Magazine for you. That was what, last June, I think it was? Yeah, June 2020. It says, this is the new normal. This is World War Flu. We're fighting for our survival, and we've all suddenly decided that a sort of public health totalitarianism is our only hope. It's our only hope in Sydney, or Brisbane, or the UK, or Israel, or New York. Public health totalitarianism. That's from the Trumpet Magazine. This was from Fox News. Just yesterday, the number of homicides in Washington, D.C. surpassed coronavirus deaths in the city by a nearly 3-to-1 ratio in July as the nation's capital continues to grapple with an uptick in murders. 3-to-1. You're more likely to die by a 3-to-1 margin in D.C. from a killer, a murderer, than you are from COVID. And you got the mayor of D.C., of course, she's caught violating her own mask mandate. The hypocrisy, they don't even believe it, these talking heads. They tell you, they lecture you, and then they go off to their dinner parties and they pull off the mask and have a good old time in a group of people, just like with Obama's party this weekend. It's not a big deal. If you're coming from the communist wing of the Democrat Party, it's all right to be hypocritical, because look, these policies, they're just about control. They need COVID, as I said last week. They need COVID to distract you away from people being murdered. It says here there were 21 homicides throughout the month compared to 8 coronavirus deaths, according to Fox DC. We've put a lot of resources and time into the COVID pandemic. Trayon White, the councilman of Ward 8, said following the July 16 killing of 6-year-old Naya Courtney. 6 years old. She didn't die from COVID. You don't die from COVID when you're six. But you surely have a chance of dying from a drive-by shooting if you're in D.C. or Chicago on the south side. It says we're in a pandemic right now when it comes to crime in this community. And we've got to start acting on it. It says the statistic comes as Washington, D.C. recorded 100 homicides by July 10th, the earliest the city has hit that number since 2003. So the highest rate of murder in Washington, D.C. in 18 years. And yet, COVID, it's all COVID, COVID, COVID. Vaccine, vaccine, vaccine. And it's happening right in the nation's capital. Speaking of the Capitol, the Capitol Hill, so-called insurrection from January 6th, you still have people rotting away. Speaking of other sicknesses, of other crimes that no one pays attention to, only Julie Kelly, is that it? She's the only reporter that cares about these people rotting in jail? You may have seen footage last week. I mentioned it. I know. I should have grabbed it, I suppose. Matt Gaetz and some of those other representatives that went to the jail, the Washington, D.C. jail, where they're holding all of these so-called insurrectionists. And they're waiting and they're waiting for their trial, their day in court. And it's August now. Some of them are in there because they just trespass. That's it. So you're going to spend, even if you went through a quick and speedy trial right after the Trespassing Act, no judge is going to put you in jail for 8 months. But these trespassers, they've been in jail for 8 months. They haven't even had a trial yet. And no one cares about them. Julie Kelly's piece at, I think it's American Greatness. She titled it Unprecedented, Unreasonable, Unconstitutional, and Wrong. Prosecutors, they're not allowing defendants to sift through the 14,000 hours of footage. They're not turning it over, and they're giving judges excuses saying, look, it's just a lot of footage hours. It's impossible to manage, and, you know, we don't have the staff and this and that. It's just going to take time. Well, okay. I mean, that seems reasonable if you've only got 3 or 4 guys working on it, but you've got 500 people in jail. or I don't know if that's the exact figure. There's that many that have been arrested. But dozens and dozens in jail. Still. In the United States of America. I mean, you talk about the madness in Australia. This is the United States where we're led to believe that you're innocent until proven guilty. Julie Kelly says this. Catherine Fifield, a lead attorney representing the Justice Department, informed Judge Trevor McFadden that the incalculable volume of video collected by the government related to the Capitol Hill breach investigation will prevent defendants and their lawyers from accessing the full body of evidence against them for several more months. You have people like Matt Gaetz saying, well, just release the footage. If you've got nothing to hide, just release it. Let independent sources go out and sift through it. They won't do it. And then they get into court and they tell the judge, Your Honor, there's just so many thousands of hours. It's going to take probably several more months. So these people have to stay in jail for a year just waiting to see if they're innocent or guilty? Innocent until proven guilty. It's just the reverse. They are guilty. They are in jail. They are in prison. They're being tortured in some cases. And then what happens when they finally get their trial and the judge slaps them on the wrist and says, hey, you shouldn't have walked into the cap. Even if the police officer opened the door, you shouldn't have gone in there and you shouldn't have sat at the vice president's seat. Okay? Yes, Your Honor, I'm sorry that I did that. What's the sentence? Well, you've already been in jail for a year. You've already been in jail for a year and a half. So maybe we can tack on some community service and be done with it. I mean, this is just sickening. It's disgusting to think that it's happening in the United States of America. Fifield says, if we do set a trial date, the government cannot meet discovery obligations until early 2022. That's a conservative estimate, she told the judge. Early 2022. Nobody died in the Capitol Hill protest except for Ashley Babbitt. And she was shot dead by a police officer. Nobody else died. So we're not even talking about anyone being in there for murder or for insurrection or for sedition. Most of them, disorderly conduct, trespassing, or some obscure statute like they were too close to a monument. Now you see we're really concerned about the monuments. My father wrote this, "In America has no helper." This was in the Trumpet magazine. By the way, you can call our operators and request a free subscription, 1-866-930-3024. He wrote, "In America, innocent until proven guilty is a foundational principle of justice. The burden of proof is on the accuser." Now, he's referring here to Donald Trump and them going after him, basically, saying he was guilty. He was guilty. And then later proven innocent. And they finally quietly drop the case and move on. It's the same thing happening here. And you'll go back to the Trump presidency and remember that he said to the American people, if they can do this to me, what can they do to you? Well, look at what they're doing. It's even worse than the attack on Donald Trump because they were never able to get him in jail. They would have liked to. But now you've got people rotting in jail. My father said, the burden of proof is on the accuser. If someone accused you of colluding with Russia, you wouldn't have to prove that you didn't. The accuser would have to prove that you did. Yet the Department of Justice and the government tried to make Donald Trump out to be guilty unless he proved his innocence. It was a blatant attempt to overthrow the government. And my father says, that's what 2 Kings 14 is all about. There was no helper for Israel. No helper, not any. Do you see any help? Do you see someone helping those people in jail? They've already paid plenty of time for trespassing and disorderly conduct. No one's suggesting that that's fine. I'm not saying go and trespass and vandalize things or smash in windows. But these people have paid their penalty more than enough. And nobody cares. No, it's all mask. COVID. What is Fauci saying now? And then the Reuters reporter. And what a contrast, by the way. The army is walking door by door to make sure there's no people violating the rules. In other news, and here all through the Trump presidency, I mean, they threw in editorializing right and left. I mean, this president is unhinged. He is dangerous. Look at this tweet about Kim Jong-un or whatever it was. I mean, nothing riled them up like the bad orange man. Julie Kelly says, well, she writes about one nonviolent offender with no criminal history who's still being held in jail. She says this, earlier this month, the department signed a multi-million dollar contract with Deloitte to create a massive database of evidence. And keep in mind, this is the biggest investigation in the history of the DOJ, okay? Now they sign this contract to try to collect all this evidence. It says here, but that process will take several weeks, if not months. The still incomplete database has sharply slowed down efforts by prosecutors and defense attorneys to hammer out plea deals for dozens, if not hundreds, of alleged rioters, Politico reported on July 9th. It says several defendants have sought quick resolution of their cases only to be told by prosecutors that they must wait until the database is established. You've got to wait. Where? In jail. You've got to wait in jail. It says, despite the lack of evidence against him, Hale has been behind bars since January. He is not charged with any violent crimes, but the Justice Department repeatedly and successfully has sought his pretrial detention. That's the Department of Injustice for you. They've kept this man in jail for 8 months. There's no evidence that he did anything violent, anything like that. And yet he's been in jail for 8 months. Listen to this recent report from CBS2 in California, clip 4.
Federal agents with weapons drawn swoop into Huntington Beach to bust a local man for his alleged role in the January 6th insurrection.
A tip turned in the 61-year-old business owner. Now he's facing federal charges.
Security camera video shows the moment an FBI raid swiftly played out in this Huntington Beach neighborhood Thursday morning. It was just before 6 a.m. when a team of agents with shields, weapons drawn, descended on the home of Glenn Allen Brooks, a neighbor who did not want to be identified, told us it's still stunning to watch.
It was actually kind of scary. I thought it was fake.
According to the criminal complaint, a member of Brooks' prayer group first tipped off federal agents back in January when, in a group chat, the Orange County man shared a selfie standing in the crowd that had broken into the U.S. Capitol. Court documents show various pictures of Brooks appearing to climb through a broken window and then at various spots inside taking photos with his cell phone.
At various spots? He took photos? Now he's going to jail. They got him. They brought the shields. They brought the guns were drawn. They brought a ramming rod to this man's house. This 61-year-old man, no violent history. No violent history. But the FBI got him. I can't believe there aren't more FBI agents in the field that are standing up against this. Maybe they are behind the scenes. Where are the whistleblowers? This is crazy. We're doing this for this? He took photos of himself at various places? They were prepared to ram the door down to take out this individual. Listen to the rest of this report, clip 5.
For his alleged role in the chaos that day, Brooks has been charged with unlawful entry and disorderly conduct on restricted grounds. More than 24 California residents have been charged in connection to the breach at the Capitol, including former UCLA student Christian Sakur. This was the FBI bust at his Costa Mesa home back in February. Federal prosecutors say they ID'd him as the person seen here, sitting in the vice president's chair during the insurrection.
Well, and there, you know, you can't sit in the vice president's chair. So he was nabbed in February, this young man. Who knows what's happened to him? And this, just a few months after the rioting and the burning that went on for months and months and months, did any of those insurrectionists, they went after federal buildings in Portland, did any of them rot in jail for 8 months just waiting for a trial? Did any of them hear from the DOJ? Hey, we're trying to collect all the evidence. You be patient and just wait in jail. You be patient. We've got to collect all the evidence. Oh, no. No, a lot of them, they went to jail, got a slap on the wrist, were let out the next day. This is just stunning. And the lack of coverage, a complete and total blackout. Good for Julie Kelly. She's the only one. Chris Cuomo going on last night about another police officer, I guess the third one that committed suicide, the third one that was involved in the January 6th protest, resisting against it, I mean. And of course, the implication is he died because it was so traumatizing. Listen to Chris Cuomo from last night, clip 8.
All three died by suicide after the January 6th attack. Hashida's death last week was announced today. They had 45 years of experience among them. Yet, the same people who claimed Blue Lives Matter mocked, laughed, disparaged the wounds inflicted on these men. Wounds of that day are going to go far beyond the 140 officers beaten with flagpoles, stabbed with metal fence stakes, smashed over the head with fire extinguishers and more. The survivors told you the extent themselves last week.
Yeah, just four of them. Where are the others? What about this? What about this committee? And what about the men in blue from last summer that were injured, attacked, burned, in some cases murdered? Summer of love, said Chris Cuomo, or words to that effect. Hey, where does it say in the Constitution that, protesting shouldn't be violent? I mean, we've got to speak through violence. That's how we get our message out. That's what they were saying last summer. And this summer, he has no idea what contributed to this officer, this Capitol Hill police officer who committed suicide. His family's not saying it was a result of January 6th. But the implication is there. He knows enough. Look, and you notice he mentioned the fire extinguisher. That's been thoroughly debunked. The fact that Officer Sicknick was murdered by a fire extinguisher. But no, they keep perpetuating the lies, the false narrative. The survivors told you all that you need to know, he said last week. Those four communist police officers. Speaking of the trauma, what about the trauma for police officers all over the country? Something like 300 commit suicide every year. Do any of the talking heads on CNN care about the other police officers? And are they going to imply, if it's 8 months after a traumatic event, are they going to imply that it was this event over here that caused the suicide? That's the implication. Listen to Representative Gates. This is from last week. He says here, clip 10.
And the 14,000 hours of tape could also show us who was animating that violence, whether they were connected in any way, directed any way by federal agencies. It raises great suspicion that we're unable to get access to this information as members of Congress. It raises even more suspicion that people deprived of their liberty right now, in the absence of any conviction, cannot get that very information.
That's right. The ones that are in jail, they can't get that information. They can't look at that footage. Matt Gaetz can't look at the jail facility to see if they're being mistreated. It's all covered in secrecy. They don't want the truth getting out about what's happening in prison in D.C. They don't want the truth getting out about who's behind. Who was behind the so-called insurrection? How many FBI agents were involved? Who shot Ashley Babbitt? When are we going to see the 14,000 hours of footage? I mean, if the committee was really wanting to do its job, we'd maybe get some answers to those questions. Instead, you get four police officers sobbing about how bad it was. And you've got something like hundreds in jail rotting away, waiting for a trial. And the DOJ saying, hey, just sit there and wait, okay? Maybe we'll get to it early next year. The United States of America, guilty. As far as the communists are concerned, guilty until proven innocent. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. When we come back, we'll continue with a study we started just yesterday. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet, the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty. Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
My father wrote some years ago that Malachi's message, yesterday you'll recall I went through James 5 with you. We talked about that prayer of Elijah, an end time Elijah, and then the split in the church, the worldwide church of God going completely astray, off track. And then how God raised up a work, and it all started, a work of raising the ruins, and it all started with Malachi's message to God's church today. My father said about that book in 2016, that book was used to revive God's work. It is the most important new revelation God has given us in this era. It's the most important book in the Laodicean era. It's the foundation of it all. It's the foundation of it all. We've got to be grounded, in other words, in this book, in the revelation contained in this work. This book that was first distributed more than three decades ago, so it's been around for a while. But think of the lightning bolts, spiritually speaking, contained in that book, in that production. All of that strong delusion that was deceiving an entire church, or they were deceived isn't maybe the best word. Satan, of course, is the master deceiver. In 2 Thessalonians 2, God sent the strong delusion to just see where people stood, to see if they loved the truth enough to stand up for it and to fight it. I mean, this is all explained in Malachi's message. Malachi's message, my father said, the noble elect have fallen in love with God's truth. They are not deceived by hugs and kisses without real substance. And they're not deceived by endless talk of love. Endless talk of love. That's why, going back to the first segment, you have to keep looking at what is happening. And don't listen to the hushed tones of propagandists, of communist whisperers. It sounds so nice. It sounds so sweet. But you look at the footage behind and you see, as we saw last summer, you see a burning building. Jesus said to judge by fruits. What was happening in that church? The Worldwide Church of God, back in the 80s and 90s, there was an endless talk of love. hugs and kisses, even as they were dismantling and destroying everything that Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, had worked so hard to build up with God's help and support. Notice Daniel 8. This is verse 11, just picking it up in the middle of this prophecy. It says, "Yes, he magnified himself, even to the prince of the host, and by him the daily was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down." This is talking about God's work just screeching to a halt. God's work being stopped by the devil and his army, his demon army, because God's people stopped doing the work. They stopped being measured by God. They stopped obeying God. They turned to lawlessness and sin, transgression, as it puts it here. Verse 12, it says, "And an host was given him against the daily by reason of transgression." That's the cause. "And it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and it prospered." And that is really one other reason why this study is so valuable, looking back at what God did to raise up the ruins and looking back at what the devil accomplished in deceiving so many of God's people, looking back at the way he attacked God's people. The reason why it's such a valuable study today, well, we need to know our church history for sure, but you just see so many parallels with what's happening to our nations today. The truth being cast to the ground and these lawless evil deeds just practicing and prospering all over the place. Just surrounded by evildoers. There really is a war over the truth. And we've got to be defenders of the truth of God. We've got to fight for the truth of God. You go back and look at that church history, and in a very real sense, we were fighting for the truth. Particularly during that lawsuit period, 1997 to 2003, 6 years of litigation. You talk about dragging out a lawsuit, and we did have to sift through a lot of discovery. There is a lot of evidence that you've got to comb through, and you get to the bottom of it, and it's obvious by the end. It was for us. These people in the Worldwide Church of God were corrupt. They were evildoers. They were trying to hide the truth. They were trying to bury the truth. Joseph DeCotch Jr. said, "I have a Christian duty to keep Mystery of the Ages out of print." He just said it boldly in his book in 1996 as if that's no big deal. And I suppose if a reporter was reporting on it, they would have said something like the ones in the first segment. In other news, this religious man says he's got a Christian duty to keep a book out of print. On to the next story. To keep it out of print in America? The United States of America? Just bury the truth like that? Well, we don't see it as the truth. Well, do you speak for everyone in America? Some real pretty amazing parallels. Verse 13, it says, "Then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spoke, How long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden under foot?" So how long is this going to go on? Have you found yourself praying that same prayer today? How long? How long? Speaking of insurrections, how long is God going to allow this communist insurrection, this communist infiltration, this government overthrow? That's what it amounts to. They stole the election. They used COVID to do it. So obvious. But people want to bury that truth, don't they? They feel like they've got a duty to keep that truth out of social media. Just keep it off the internet if possible. Certainly keep it off of Fox News and the news programs. And if some reporter doesn't cooperate, just blot them out. Just get rid of them. How long is this going to go on? Verse 14, it says, "And he said to me, Into 2,300 days, or sacrifices it means, in other words, 1,150 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed." See, then you'll finally see a revival, then you'll finally see ruins being raised from the dust. And so from Mr. Armstrong's death in January of 1986 to March of 1989, a period of 1,150 days, that's when my father started working fast as possible on Malachi's message to God's church today. God started giving him understanding in March 11th, to be precise, of 1989. During that period, I mean, the work had just stopped. It had stopped. Notice Malachi 2 in verse 1. It says, "And now, O you priests, this commandment is for you. If you will not hear, and if you will not lay it to heart, to give glory unto my name, says the Eternal of Hosts, I will even send the curse," it should read, "the curse upon you, and I will curse your blessings." Yes, I've cursed them already, because you do not lay it to heart. So Malachi 2 here is about a ministry that went astray. It's about a ministry that turns away from what their father Levi had taught them. That's a type of Herbert Armstrong in his office. All the teachings, all the training that Mr. Armstrong had given those ministers, who then came along later and tried to bury the very teachings that they were brought up on. That's what this chapter is about. And then you've, of course, got as a backdrop to this book, you've got Malachi, the prophet, the one that wrote the book, delivering a warning message. And that, of course, happened again in this end time. Down in verse 4, it says, "And you shall know that I have sent this commandment unto you, that my covenant might be with Levi, saith the Eternal of Hosts." You're going to know, you rebellious ministers, you're going to know that I sent this commandment to you, and that my covenant was with Levi. How would they know? Well, God obviously has to send a prophet, a servant. He has to raise up a work to tell them where they went off track. In Malachi's message, it says, this is a specific prophecy about Malachi's message. God said, I sent this message to you, and you shall know that God sent it. They will know, you see, they will know before or during the Great Tribulation that Malachi's message is from God. So this is an important book, as I've stressed on the last two programs. This is the foundation, spiritually speaking. This is the cornerstone of the work of the Philadelphia Church of God. And this is truth that as just to follow on the theme we had at our summer educational program, this is truth that we really want to be fired up about. We want to delve into Malachi's message and the sermon my father gave over the camp or during the camp. He encouraged the instructors, the teachers, here at our academy and at the college, to go through Malachi's message just in preparation for the upcoming school year because of how foundational this teaching, this truth is. Some good admonition for us to stay grounded, in the basics, to stay grounded in this important revelation that God, the most important revelation that God gave in the Laodicean era. This is what got it all started. The Bible talks about, I haven't gotten into the passages yet, I'll do that later on this week, but the Bible talks about eating and digesting this message. We really want to consume it and digest it because it's strong meat. It's a lot of spiritual meat for sure, as it says over in Hebrews 5. We'll carry on with the study as we proceed through the week of Trumpet Dailies. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily, coming to you live every weekday of the work week, and of course, posted as a podcast at our website, thetrumpet.com/live. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.